All right, you ready for this? We're talking satellites and how they can figure out how tall buildings are.
It's pretty amazing stuff.
It really is.
Yeah.
Super futuristic. We're diving into a research paper. It's called How High Are We? Large-scale building height estimation at 10 meters
Yeah.
using Sentinel-1 SAR and Sentinel-2 MSI time series.
Catchy title.
Yeah, I like it. And it's all about, using data we get from space. It's free. And then using that to make these really detailed 3D maps of cities.
And the cool part is how they use data from two different Sentinel satellites. They're both part of the European Copernicus mission. Sentinel-1 that uses radar, and Sentinel-2 that captures multispectral images.
Okay, so I'm picturing these satellites just like constantly circling the Earth, snapping pictures. But how do those pictures, how do they actually tell us like how tall a building is? The paper mentions something called a T-Swinnet model,
Yeah.
which sounds pretty sci-fi to me.
It does. Well, think of it this way. So Sentinel-1, the radar, it's really good at detecting buildings. And that's because of the way the signals bounce off them.
Okay.
So imagine you're bouncing a ball off a wall.
Yeah.
That's kind of what's happening with the radar. And the taller the building, the stronger that bounce signal is going to be.
So it's finding the buildings, but then we need Sentinel 2 to actually measure them.
Exactly. So Sentinel-2, it sees the world in different wavelengths of light.
Okay.
And this lets us tell what surfaces are made of. Like, is it concrete, metal, trees? And this really helps refine the height estimates that we get from Sentinel-1. Because sometimes this can be thrown off by, like, a shiny rooftop or a bunch of trees around a building.
Right. So it's like having this two-person surveying team, but they're in space.
That's a great way to put it.
But here's something I don't quite get. The study used like a whole year's worth of data. Why so much?
Well, imagine you were trying to figure out the height of a tree just from its shadow. That shadow's length, it changes throughout the day,
Yeah,
right?
for sure.
Same with buildings in these satellite images. The way a building looks in the data, it changes depending on the time of day, the season, even the weather.
Okay.
So by looking at a year's worth of data, they can account for all those variations and then build a much more accurate 3D model.
So they're using all these tiny changes over time to like really nail down the shape and the height of each building. That's some pretty impressive detective work. But how does this compare to more traditional methods like using airplanes or LiDAR? I mean, those seem pretty high tech too.
They are, and they can be super accurate, but
Yeah.
they're also expensive and really time-consuming.
Yeah.
So this new method, using the Sentinel data, this could be a game changer, especially for these large-scale mapping projects.
Right.
It's like being able to do the same job, but with a fraction of the cost and effort.
Okay, so cost effective, uses freely available data, but how accurate AI is it?
Well, they tested this model on data sets from the Netherlands, Switzerland, Estonia, and Germany. And the results were really impressive. They were able to estimate building heights with an average error of, get this, less than 2 meters.
Wow.
And to really put that in perspective, they compared their results to this global building height product. It's called GHSL Built HR 2023A. Now, this global product, it has a much coarser resolution. And when they compared them at the same resolution, the new method was actually more accurate.
So they're getting more detail A and D, better accuracy.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. All
All right, but let's get back to that what was it called? T-Swinnet thing.
right.
Can you break that down for us? Like, what exactly is it and how does it actually work?
So it's a type of deep learning model.
Okay.
It's specifically designed to analyze and learn from image sequences.
Yeah.
And these sequences are over time. So imagine you're teaching a computer to recognize patterns in how images change, like how shadows move or how a building might look different in summer versus winter.
So you're giving the computer like a superpower to see how things evolve over time.
Yeah, exactly. And the T in T-SwinNet actually stands for temporal, which basically means it's all about analyzing those changes over time.
Okay, I got it.
This model is trained on a massive amount of satellite imagery and building height data. It's learning the complex relationships between them.
So it's like crunching through all this data and then learning to predict the heights of buildings based on what it sees.
Exactly. Think of it like teaching a kid to ride a bike. You can explain all the physics behind it, but ultimately they learn by doing and getting feedback on their balance.
Yeah.
The T-SwinNet, it's similar. It learns by processing tons of examples, and then it refines its predictions based on how well it matches the real building heights.
Right. So it's all about practice, practice, practice.
Pretty much.
So, okay, that makes sense. But how do they even go about training this model? Where do they get all this data from in the first place?
They use this huge data set. It has satellite images and building heights from all different countries. They carefully chose areas with a wide range of urban environments. And then they split this data, so there's a training set for the model to learn from, and then a testing set to see how well it does on new cities it hasn't seen before.
Ah, clever.
This makes sure that the model isn't just memorizing specific buildings, it's actually learning general rules about how to estimate height.
So they're making sure it can apply its knowledge to any city, not just the ones it's already seen.
Right.
That's pretty smart.
It's a crucial step in making sure the model is truly effective.
Okay, so the data is split. But what about the training process itself? How does that actually work?
It's kind of like teaching a dog a new trick. You show them what to do, reward them when they get it right, and correct them when they don't.
Yeah.
So in this case, they feed the model tons of satellite images along with the actual building heights. The model then tries to predict the heights and then gets feedback on how close its predictions were.
Hmm.
This process repeats millions of times, with the model constantly tweaking its internal workings to get better and better at its job.
Wow, sounds like a massive undertaking.
It is. But the results speak for themselves.
Yeah, the results are definitely there. Okay, so they've got this super smart model that's learned to predict building heights from satellite data. But the research paper, it mentions that they had to overcome some challenges along the way. What were some of the hurdles they encountered?
Well, one of the biggest challenges was dealing with what they call urban complexity. You know, cities are messy places. They're full of different building types, varying heights, and there's all sorts of obstacles that can block the view of the satellites.
Yeah, I can imagine that, like trees, bridges, and just other structures getting in the way of the satellite's view.
Exactly. So the researchers had to develop some pretty clever techniques to account for all this messiness. For example, they used a method called temporal attention, and that helps the model focus on the most important information in the images, even when there's a lot of visual clutter.
It's like giving the model like a superpower to see through the chaos and just focus on the key features that indicate building height.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
I'm starting to see why they call this a deep dive.
It definitely lives up to its name.
So they've tackled urban complexity, but what else?
Well, they also had to address this issue of generalization.
Okay.
They wanted to make sure their model could accurately estimate building heights in new cities, ones it hadn't been specifically trained on.
Right, because a model that only works in a few specific places, that's not very helpful in the grand scheme of things.
Exactly. So they tested their model on a whole bunch of cities across Europe, cities that were not included in that training data.
Uh-huh.
And the results were really promising. The model was still able to estimate building heights with pretty good accuracy in these new locations.
That's a pretty big deal. It shows that their approach is really robust. It's not just a fluke.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I think we've covered a lot of ground already. I'm already feeling a little overwhelmed by all this information, to be honest.
It's a lot to take in.
Could we maybe just recap the key takeaways so far?
Of course. So first, we learned that researchers have developed this new method for estimating building heights. And it uses freely available satellite data from the Sentinel-1 and Sentinel-2 missions.
Right. And this method, it involves combining that radar and multispectral data and using these time series images to capture those subtle changes in how buildings look over time.
Exactly. We also talked about the T-SwineyNet model.
Mm-hmm.
That's the deep learning powerhouse behind all of this. And remember, this model is trained to both estimate the building heights and actually segment the buildings from the background.
Yeah.
Which really helps it learn more effectively.
And of course, we talked about the challenges the researchers had to overcome, like figuring out how to deal with the complexity of cities and making sure that the model can actually be used in new locations.
Right. Those were key hurdles they had to clear.
Definitely. Okay, this has been a really insightful deep dive so far.
Glad to hear it.
I think we've still got a lot more to unpack, though.
Oh, we're just getting started.
So stay tuned for the next part, where we'll delve even deeper into this fascinating research.
Welcome back. Ready to dig deeper into this building height research?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh.
Before we took that break, you were talking about how the researchers dealt with urban complexity.
Yeah, it's a real challenge.
It sounds like it. Cities, they're like giant puzzles, especially when you're looking at them from space.
Exactly. You've got buildings all crammed together, different shapes and sizes, and all sorts of things blocking the view. Trees, bridges, you name it.
Right. So how do they even account for all that chaos in their model?
Well, they had to get creative. One challenge was dealing with areas where buildings are so packed together that it's hard to tell them apart in the satellite images.
Yeah, I can see that. Like,
yeah.
trying to count individual trees in a really dense forest from above?
Exactly. So to tackle that, they designed the model to consider not just each building on its own, but also the surrounding context. So like its neighbors, the street layout, and things like that.
Oh, so it's like giving the model a sense of the bigger picture.
Exactly. That helps it make better decisions about where one building ends and another begins.
That's clever.
Yeah.
But what about those things blocking the view? Like, imagine trying to measure a house, but it's hidden behind this giant oak tree.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to get an accurate reading, would you?
No, not at all. You'd need to find a different angle or climb up high to see over the tree.
Right.
But you can't exactly reposition a satellite on a whim.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So they used a technique called data augmentation to basically create synthetic data, data that mimics those obstructed views. They added artificial blockages to the training images, which forced the model to learn how to deal with them.
So they're basically giving the model a crash course in obstacle avoidance.
Yeah.
By training it on images that have these obstructions, they're teaching it to kind of see through the clutter.
Precisely. Think of it like training a detective to spot clues, even in a messy crime scene. This data augmentation, it's a common technique in deep learning, and it's really effective in improving a model's performance.
So they've managed to build this amazing model that can accurately estimate building heights, all using freely available data. But I know every technology has its limits, right? What are some of the situations where this method might not work as well?
Well, you're right. No model is perfect. One limitation is that the model's accuracy, it really depends on the quality of the training data. If the building height measurements they use to train the model are off or incomplete, the model's predictions will be off too.
Makes sense. So it's garbage in, garbage out, as they say. Are there any specific types of buildings or environments that might be tricky?
Well, the model does great in most urban settings, but it might struggle in areas with super tall buildings or buildings with really complex architectural features, things that are very different from what it was trained on.
Really, like we were talking about how it tends to underestimate those really tall buildings.
Exactly. Think of it like this. If the model has mostly seen buildings under 30 stories tall during training, it might have a hard time figuring out the height of a 100-story skyscraper.
It's just outside of its experience.
Exactly. But even with these limitations, it's still a remarkable step forward for 3D mapping technology.
It really is. What are your thoughts on what this means for the future of the field?
I think it's a really exciting time. This research shows the incredible potential of using this freely available satellite data. We can create these detailed 3D models of our world. And this opens up all sorts of possibilities, not just for researchers, but for everyone.
That's what I think is so fascinating about this. It's not just some abstract scientific thing. It has real-world implications that can benefit everyone. It's like making this information that was previously only available to people with expensive equipment accessible to everyone.
I totally agree. Imagine a world where anyone, anywhere, could access these detailed 3D maps of their community. It could empower people to really understand their surroundings, contribute to local planning, or even monitor environmental changes in their area.
That's a powerful vision. I love it. But before we get too carried away, let's talk about some other potential uses for this technology. We touched on urban planning and disaster response, but what else could benefit from this kind of 3D data?
Oh, so many things. Think about virtual tourism. Imagine exploring historical landmarks, walking through busy marketplaces, or even climbing to the top of skyscrapers all from home.
That would be incredible. Talk about immersive education.
Right. And it wouldn't just be for fun. It could have practical applications, too. People could visit destinations virtually before they travel. That would help them make more informed decisions.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
And it could even help people who have mobility issues experience places that they might not be able to visit otherwise. And beyond tourism, we could use this technology to create more realistic video games.
Oh, yeah.
Or even train self-driving cars to navigate in cities.
Wow. The possibilities really do seem endless. It feels like we're on the edge of a major leap forward. It's pretty inspiring to think about all the ways this research could improve our lives and help solve real-world problems. I know we have more to discuss, though.
We do.
Let's take a short break and then come back and delve even deeper. Okay, we're back. Ready to wrap up our deep dive into 3D city mapping with satellite data. Before the break, we were talking about the amazing potential this tech has. From urban planning to virtual tourism, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, and we're really just scratching the surface. One area that I think is really fascinating is using this technology to learn more about historical cities.
Oh, wow, you're right. Imagine making detailed 3D models of, like, ancient ruins or lost civilizations.
Exactly. Like, picture walking through the streets of Pompeii, you know, before Mount Vesuvius erupted, or exploring Angkor Wat in its prime.
It'd be like stepping back in time. It's like every historian's dream.
It would totally change how we study and experience the past. And it's not just about ancient history. We could use this to study how cities have evolved over time, you know, track the changes in architecture, planning, even population density.
It's like having a visual record of the city's growth layer by layer.
Exactly. It's like a living archive of our urban heritage. We could trace the footsteps of the people who came before us and really understand human civilization.
And that knowledge could help us design better cities in the future.
Absolutely. By understanding the past, both the successes and failures, we can learn from those mistakes and build more sustainable, livable cities.
That's a really powerful thought. It reminds us that technology isn't just about, you know, shiny new things. It's also about understanding our past and shaping our future. But let's talk about accessibility for a second. We know it uses freely available satellite data, which is great. But what about the, like, the computing power needed to actually process all that data? Is this something that only big research labs or companies with supercomputers can do?
That's a great question. Deep learning models, like the one we've been discussing, they can be really computationally intensive to train.
Yeah.
But the good news is cloud computing is getting better and better. So now it's easier and cheaper for researchers, even individuals, to access powerful computing resources.
So you're saying that with the right tools and a bit of knowledge, anyone could use this technology?
Absolutely. There are already open source platforms and tools available. You know, anyone with some basic coding skills could experiment with deep learning and create their own 3D models from satellite data. And as the technology improves, these tools will become even easier to use.
That's really exciting. It opens up so many possibilities for citizen scientists, students, anyone who's curious about the world. So what about the researchers who did this study? What are they working on now?
Oh, they're not done yet. They're already working on expanding their model to other parts of the world. They're gathering data from lots of different urban environments to see how it works in diverse settings.
So they're putting their model to the test, seeing if it can handle different cities, landscapes, everything.
Exactly. And they're trying to improve the accuracy, especially with those really tall skyscrapers. They want to make sure it can handle even the most extreme cases.
Always striving for better. Are they looking at any specific real-world applications?
Yeah, actually, they're working with other researchers and organizations to explore a bunch of different applications. One that's really interesting is using this technology to monitor deforestation and track changes in land use, especially in those hard-to-reach areas.
That's so important, especially now. With climate change and protecting our forests, having accurate information about land use is crucial.
Definitely. And that's just one example. The potential applications for this are vast.
I think it's safe to say that this deep dive has given us more questions than answers, but in good way.
It's definitely sparked some ideas.
It's like ignited our imaginations and given us a glimpse into this future where 3D mapping isn't just for specialists, it's for everyone.
I totally agree. It's a testament to how creative humans are and our desire to explore and understand the world. And it reminds us that even with these huge global challenges, we have the tools and the smarts to find solutions and build a better future.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our deep dive into 3D city mapping using satellite data. Thanks for joining us.
It was great exploring this with you. Until next time, keep learning and stay curious.